Hola, everyone. We're back for another episode of La Pausa Pod. It's myself and Jamie this week, and we're going to be discussing Real Madrid and Real Madrid's thumping of Girona with 4-0 in the end. But before we get into that game, we'll jump into our stats corner. We've only been doing this. This is the second week that we've done the stats corner, which if you didn't listen to last week's pod, it's basically three statistics that stood out to us last week or coming up this week, or just three statistics that we caught our eye that we've been looking at. And these ones, honestly, Jamie's had to find them on here that completely blew my mind. I just can't. I've seen it and I saw it yesterday and I still can't understand it, because I don't know if it's a common thing that happens a lot, but I just can't understand how it's even a real statistic. Anyway, let's get into it. So the first one is Borja Mayoral has scored 15 goals in La Liga this season. That's the most at this stage of a campaign by a non-Real Madrid, Barcelona or Atletico Madrid player since Iago Aspas did the same 15 in 2017-18. So 6 years, basically. Borja Mayoral is 26 now. Has never been capped by Spain. Do you think the upcoming games in March, he's going to be on the list?
Possibly. I mean, if you saw Morata's injury at the weekend, watching that, my first thought was maybe that's a spot for Mayoral, but seems like Morata's injury is not too bad in hindsight. But yeah, for the season he's having, to be right up there with Bellingham and Dovbyk for goal scoring, playing in Getafe team is just amazing, really. And I think we have to credit Bordalas as well, for even though they play in teams that don't generate a huge amount, the way that he gets all of his strikers to become just pure fighters for 90 minutes, I think is it's just a real testament to his work. Because you watch Mayoral, and from minute one, he's kind of just fighting all over the pitch and you know, just winning every single inch that he can to try and find his way into chances. And this is a season where the chances have fallen for him, and he totally deserves everything he's getting.
Yeah, I was watching Getafe versus Real Betis just for an upcoming pod, because we're going to talk about Real Betis in a couple of weeks, and we've been planning a Getafe podcast with Bordalas and what he's done this time around and how he's changed since last time when he was so successful with Getafe. He's repeating what he's done with Getafe after he had left for Valencia and that didn't work out. But yeah, it's a credit to Bordalas, and just sometimes you get a coach and a club that just perfectly seem to match each other. And then likewise with Borja Mayoral, you get a coach and a manager you get a coach and a player who just seem to understand each other and what's needed and suit each other's styles. And likewise Mayoral, you get a club and a player that just seem to perfectly connect. Jaime Mata is a good one with Getafe, and Bordalas, that's just a perfect kind of combination there. But Mayoral is the same in that he's kind of bounced around, and it never looked like he was going to become the kind of striker who could ever get double digits or certainly not 15, just slightly over halfway through the season. So I think I'm not entirely sure how translatable that would be to a different team. But right now, Mayoral, Bordalas and Getafe are just playing, I won't say they're playing some nice football, but they're getting results like Bordalas promises, and they're definitely a team to watch, and one we'll be talking about in the next couple of weeks. So the next stat on this week's edition of Stats Corner is Las Palmas have now conceded the fewest first half goals of any team in Europe's big five leagues this season. They've conceded just 3 goals in 24 first halves of football. That's not the amazing stat I was referring to earlier, but that is a pretty amazing stat, Jerry.
Yeah, it's another first half clean sheet against Valencia at the weekend. And it's, especially after watching Barcelona on Sunday evening, the way that they were chasing goals to try and equal that game and then get ahead. But they did it in a way that they were just leaving themselves open all the time and inviting Granada into the game, making it an open match. Las Palmas were exactly the opposite of that against Valencia, where, of course, they're trying to score a winner because they're playing at home and they can feel that they're on top, but they play in a way that never really gives the opponent a sniff. Valencia's XG in this match was, I think, under 0.5, so, yeah, practically nothing. And Las Palmas just have a way of keeping the game together, their play connected, making sure the game doesn't open up. And we have to say on the occasions that it does happen, which is not too often, Álvaro Valles is obviously the goalkeeper of the season in La Liga, so they've certainly got a bit of help back there from their goalkeeper this season, or a lot, I should say. But I think just the game plan, the way they never veer from the script, they keep playing, even when sort of anxiety is building in the stadium to try and push on for a winner, they just keep moving the ball. And yeah, they got a 2-0 win in the end. And when you get that breakthrough at the end, it just looks like a team that they're so convinced in what they're doing. And yeah, it paid off.
Yeah, you sent out a tweet on our Twitter account yesterday saying the two players who completed the most passes in match day 24 in La Liga, Saúl Coco, 90 completed out of 94 attempted. Mika Marmol with 113 completed passes and 122 attempts. I'm saying that in a very NFL style way. He completed 32 of his. I don't know how to say passes. He completed 113 of his 122 passes. That'll do. Okay, so yeah, and obviously the Barcelona comparisons are inevitable because they both play a similar style of way, and I guess the situation and the circumstances are slightly different. Like you said, there, Barcelona have to win games, whereas Las Palmas are like, look, we want to win, but we're absolutely fine getting a nil-all draw against Valencia too, because ultimately Las Palmas are overachieving right now based on their objectives, which is staying up this season. There's not as much pressure to go forward. And I guess that's the one main difference that you could pick out, in that Las Palmas just, they are calmer on the ball, and the reason why Barcelona get broken, the game becomes so chaotic, is because they're not picking the right moments to attack and to go for that killer ball, and it just feels like they're forcing it a little bit. And Las Palmas are the exact opposite of that. And yeah, I suppose it just kind of furthers the case for maybe Garcia Pimienta as the new Barcelona manager, although Deco's comments recently after the 3-3 draw with Granada, saying basically we need to kind of rethink this whole model. So that kind of throws a spanner in the works when we're thinking about Xavi's replacement. It might not be a like-for-like kind of traditional Barcelona replacement. They might go for something else that suits modern football better, but let's see. But right now, Las Palmas are doing a better Barcelona impression than Barcelona are doing themselves.
Yeah, again, just to touch on Barcelona, it's Xavi said after the game that they didn't have the legs at the top end of the pitch to be able to really stretch the game. And then you watch them and they're knocking balls forward at a rate that I just cannot believe a Barcelona team would do in a home game against one of the worst teams in the league. That's something Las Palmas don't do. If they're not forcing things forward, they're saying, if you want the ball, come get it from us. We're just going to keep passing and wait for our moment. Whereas Barcelona they give the ball up just unbelievably cheaply. And Xavi said it himself, we didn't have the legs to attack over the top. So why are you not showing the personality to be able to play around Granada and keep the ball and alter the way you approach the game? Because, you know, you said it yourself, we were never going to be able to play over the top. So Just keep shifting the ball and wait for your moment. So, Garcia Pimienta, yeah, he's. I feel like his personality shines through Las Palmas. Obviously, they're a smaller team with lower expectations, but in a way that Xavi's just really hasn't at Barcelona.
And it's funny because that's the exact thing that Xavi was good at. He would just pass the ball sideways and backwards and 5 yards ahead, just in order, just all day, in order to keep the opposition defense moving. And that's exactly what his Barcelona team are missing. So there's it's definitely a strange one to watch. But yeah, we'll talk about Barcelona more in future episodes, I'm sure. But this is the statistic that I just couldn't get my head around. There wasn't a single offside in the two games between Real Madrid and Girona this season. The first time that's happened for Real Madrid against an opponent in La Liga since 2006-2007. That's on record. So I can't understand how a game wouldn't have even one offside, let alone two games, with such attacking teams. Is this a common thing, Jamie? Is like, or am I just becoming aware to this? I just assume that there's 3, 4, 5 offsides every game I watch. There's like 8, 9, 10. How is there not one in across 180 minutes plus stoppage time of football?
Yeah, I think since 2006-07, which is as far back as this goes, I think there was only 4 instances of a team playing home and away against each other in a single season, and there not being a single one. So yeah, this does not happen very often, full stop, not just for Real Madrid. But again, some people are probably thinking, you know, it's an anomaly, of course, but what does that actually tell us about the matches? And for me, I would say I immediately just thought of the respect that both teams are paying each other. Neither really went after the ball in either match. Michel did say after the game they wanted to play 2-2, you know, 1v1 all over the pitch, but it never felt like that. And both teams were just very happy to drop back into their own half once it became clear that, you know, the opposition was circulating the ball well. And yeah, to me, that was just it. Both teams wanted to limit space behind, especially Real Madrid, given the fact that they were leading for most of the two games. And yeah, it was just a sign of ultimate respect paid to both sides, I would say. What did you take from it? Same? Or
yeah, I'd say the first game, I'd have to go back and rewatch that and make sense of that. But I think the second game, and we might as well move right in now to talking about Real Madrid and Girona. So I think what it tells us is a couple of things about Girona's backline and Real Madrid's attack. Jude Bellingham has those late runs down to a science. Diego Simeone mentioned it in the build-up to the derby last week. He was saying like that's his main trait, and it's the most dangerous thing that he does. And I know he does everything at an exceptional level, but those runs are just, he's got them down to a science, and he's so athletic. He covers so much ground so quickly that it's just almost impossible to defend. And I think Girona knew that. And I also think Girona knew that they couldn't match him athletically. So what it tells us is that Eric Garcia was kind of he wasn't playing a line. He wasn't going to try and catch him offside because he knew A, Bellingham is so good at this, and B, we're going to get embarrassed if we get it wrong. So let's just rule that out and step back and try to match him, try to get your body in front of him. The same with Juanpi. And I think that speaks to that. And I think on the other side, I think Real Madrid, basically the same. I was watching Tchouaméni and just kind of thinking about how hard it must be for a midfielder to step into that, into the central defence like Tchouaméni did. And I would imagine, for a player with all the traits of that Tchouaméni has, I would say one of the most difficult things is to get the offside line right. And when you're a midfielder, you're not as far back. You're not leading the line. You're not leading the defensive line. So I'd say that would cause him to maybe cheat back a little bit. And also, on Girona's attack, I don't think that they had that ball in over the top because Real Madrid, A, took an early lead, B, Tchouaméni and Carvajal were probably cheating back a little bit because they could, because of the early lead, and also because Girona, yeah, they just didn't have that pass. Alex Garcia never really tried that pass. I think that's why they started Porto, looking for that ball maybe over the top, playing a little bit more vertically rather than horizontally. But it just wasn't there. And Real Madrid were just so good defensively. So I think that's more or less what it tells us. And I don't know about you, but I'm going to say something that probably a little bit, not controversial, but a bit of a hot take, as they call it nowadays. But I actually don't think Girona were that bad in this game.
No, I agree.
Like, I think this is who they are. And I think that the first goal, nothing you can do about it. And once they do take that early lead, it's Girona are struggling all the way. You're missing Yangel Herrera and you're missing Daley Blind, which are... Daley Blind, you might think and you might scoff, but he is, as a left-footed centre-back, he is so important to what they do on that left-hand side of the field. That basically wasn't even an option for them at the Bernabeu on Saturday afternoon. So, and I understand that there's a real fear now that Girona could fall off and might not even make the top four. They play Athletic Bilbao next Monday night, and a game that, I mean, I just love watching Athletic Bilbao at the moment. I think they're playing so well. I think they're a handful for literally any team in the world right now. And that could be a really dangerous game for them to lose two in a row. It's rough. But I'm also not that worried. After watching it back, I'm like, I'm actually not that worried about Girona. This is who they are. Get Yangel Herrera back, get Daley Blind back, and this is fine.
Yeah, no, I totally agree that on the two things, like, I have to say, look, Real Madrid were totally superior by the end, but I also didn't feel like Girona were the sitting duck on the rewatch that I felt they were the first time I watched. I think actually, up until the second goal, Girona were pretty fine in the match, I would say. The only difference, of course, was Vinicius put one in the top corner from 25, 30 yards. And it might sound ridiculous to say this in hindsight, but if you go back and watch the first 3 minutes, up to about 3:30, I would say, Girona came out and the pass count up until that point was 55 for Girona up until Real Madrid 3. And of course, that's not a definitive number. It's not to say they were on track to win the game or anything like that. But I felt like I was watching the Girona that I watch every week. And I took that to say that Girona were in the Bernabeu. They were in this huge match. And they were playing like themselves. And then from then on, they kind of, I think that run was kind of snapped by Bellingham. Camavinga threaded a pass through to Bellingham, sort of deep in his own half. He spun out of it and he just carried the ball to the other end of the pitch. And then from there, Real Madrid were in the match. And every time they kind of countered, they looked really dangerous. But yeah, on the rewatch, I didn't feel, at least for half an hour, that Girona were just kind of a punch bag. They were having spells of possession. And there were spells where Bernabeu was whistling and they were getting a little bit anxious about the amount of the ball they were having. They just didn't really find the solutions in the final third. And of course, some of that was Ancelotti was happy for Girona to have the ball as long as they didn't have meaningful space. So yeah, no, if it's a hot take, I'm right there with you that Girona were okay for a decent part of this match.
Yeah, and I think that Real Madrid's traits in midfield, so it was Camavinga, Cruz, and Valverde, the Camavinga and Valverde either side of Cruz, Cruz holding it down the middle. Those two guys on either side, those two eights, are kryptonite for Girona and what Girona tried to do, especially without Yangel Herrera, because the beauty of Girona's system is they have those tens or whatever you want to call them dropping off the midfield, and it causes all sorts of problems for the defensive midfielder to pivot, because he's looking left and he sees a 10 dropping, he's looking right and he sees another 10 dropping, and then Miguel Gutierrez and Daley Blind are able to find that player on the left-hand side, and then Eric Garcia and Alex Garcia or whoever it is, Jan Couto, on the right are able to find that player. And then you've got Jagankov coming in off the right and you've got Savino coming in off the left. But that was that those two alleyways or channels were half spaces were completely shut down by Valverde and Camavinga, two of the most athletic players in world football. And coming up against Porto, and I've said his name a couple of times now and we'll talk about that in a minute, but I don't think that was the right option. I think if Michel had a do-over, he'd probably he probably wouldn't start Porto, although I can maybe see the reasoning for it. And we've got another section coming down the line with Jamie's Choose His Own Adventure section, where I get to ask him what he might have done differently. But let's just talk about a couple of the stats here. So Real Madrid 7-0 over two games against Girona this season. The XG was 5.6 to Real Madrid, 1.9 to Girona. So Saturday was the biggest XG difference in a game between two top six sides in La Liga this season. And obviously that's where the feeling that this is a proper hiding comes in. And in many ways it was a hiding too. Like, Real Madrid did what they needed to do. They didn't have to really punish Girona in possession. They didn't have to hurt them and on the ball. They just sat back, soaked it up, and maybe that is a hiding. Maybe that is exactly why that was the sensation. But Girona didn't manage a shot from inside the box after the 7th minute at the Bernabeu. But just talking about those early leads that Real Madrid took in both of these games now, and at Montilivi and at the Bernabeu, Real Madrid, they scored 7 goals from 4.8 XG across two games against Girona, and they scored 7 of 13 shots on target overall. So this wasn't like a huge volume of shots just kind of peppering Girona's goal. This is just pure ruthless efficiency, which is actually probably scarier than peppering the goals with shots. This is just, they were just ruthless.
Yeah, that's a big element of the two matches, just the ruthless finishing from Real Madrid. And it felt like they scored in terrible moments for Girona across the two games as well. If you go from kickoff up until the first goal in both matches, Girona are pretty much the better side, I would say. Obviously, it's a small amount of time, but again, you think back to the first leg, Girona have two massive chances to go one up before Bellingham invents a goal out of nothing for Joselu. And again, in this match, Girona just never had the individuals that would generate something in what was, a balanced match up until that point, in the way that Real Madrid did. You look at the first three goals for Real Madrid, they're all just individual brilliance. Vinicius puts one in the top corner. Second goal, Vinicius outside of the foot pass. Bellingham careers through, puts it in. Third goal, Vinicius goes round Young Koto on the outside and rebound falls to Bellingham. Yeah, just there's a lot of things that Girona will probably look back on and think they could have done better. Michel might think there's a different, decisions he could have made about the 11. But again, if Real Madrid are going to be that ruthless in front of goal and that efficient and pull out those star moments in the way that they did, you're going to lose. That's just as simple. As simple as it gets, but it's the truth.
And that's something that Girona prey on, in that they wanted a kind of a chaotic game, and they don't mind those counterattacks against weaker teams, because they think technically we will outdo you. But then you look at Cruz, Camavinga and Valverde, who Real Madrid's trio in midfield, they had a combined 96% pass completion rate. So the ease and the calmness with which Real Madrid play out from the back and are able to combine and are able to hurt you on the counter just make Girona's press and make Girona's defense collapsing. They just walk through you. And that's kryptonite for Girona, because you play a team like even Atletico Madrid, for example, or Barcelona this season, which we saw. Girona are okay with the chaos because they know they're technically good enough to outdo you. But then against Real Madrid, you're just looking at Valverde and Camavinga, who are athletically supreme to most midfielders in the world, but they're also technically excellent. And it's just a quality issue then at that point, So, yeah, I think that's basically what we're dealing with. And then on to the attack, and just speaking about the effect, the efficiency and the ruthlessness, and I know it's an intangible thing and it's hard to say, but I think Bellingham brings that to the team. He's just non-stop constantly going. His goal, actually, the tap in from Vinicius was just a case in point where he's just constantly driving forward, putting pressure on your defense. 2-0 up, 3-0 up, it doesn't matter. Even if he's played 3, 4, 5 games in a couple of weeks, it's kind of scary to watch, like, if you're an opposing player, because he's just non-stop. And I think that he brings a seriousness to the team that probably might not be there. Like, when you look at Vinicius and the way that he's spoken about trying to change and some of the kind of showboating and things like that, he has to become more ruthless, because Bellingham brings him along with him as I just think Real Madrid are a far more serious outfit with Jude Bellingham in the team. So then on to Vinicius, who dribbled past Jan Couto more times than any player has been dribbled past in a league game at the Bernabeu since 2007-2008. Jan Couto, I felt sorry for him in some ways. He got booked at the end, misses the Athletic Bilbao game on Monday, and I almost wonder if that was just him throwing up the white flag. But yeah, I felt sorry for him in one way, but on the other hand, A, Vinicius was inspired, and B, Jan Couto, I don't think, is ever going to be judged solely on his defensive merits, because that's not his strengths.
No, for sure. To face Vinicius at the Bernabeu is difficult. Whatever day, whatever time. But after he's put one in the top corner from 25 yards that early in the match, the guy was just, it was like he had flames coming off him for the rest of the game, and he just felt like unstoppable from that point on. So, the game was always going to be, can Girona impose themselves in attack enough to worry Real Madrid? Can they have enough of the ball to control the game? Because, Jan Couto was never going to be able to hold up against Vinicius in an open game. And the same for the rest of Girona's defence. Miguel Gutierrez, Wampe, Eric Garcia. Yeah. Michel actually said it after that, I exposed my players today. Particularly the defense, because I asked them to, to defend far from goal in moments, 1v1 against players who were faster and stronger than them. And Couto unfortunately had to experience something very unfortunate, because, there's also the element of, I'm sure he went into that match thinking, this is obviously a big game, but I'm also kind of auditioning for Real Madrid at this point, because there's been rumours that they're looking at him for the right back spot. And I think that's probably an element of why he was crying at the end of the game as well, because he felt like on such a big day for him individually, he'd kind of been shown up. So, but yeah, like you said, Couto is never going to be judged on his defending. I don't think he'll ever be a strong defender, but yeah. I'll borrow another quote from Michel. He said, Jan Couto was, last week, Jan Couto was not a Real Madrid player, nor is he now Girona's worst player. So, yeah, it was just a bad day. Unfortunately, when the lights were brightest.
And I think he will bounce back, and it will be interesting to see him bouncing back from this, because he had beaten out Arnau Martinez for that right back spot, and obviously, Michel really liked what he was bringing to the team. But given the fact that Bellingham's runs in behind, it meant that Vinicius could drop off. So what you're dealing with then is an already weak back line. Vinicius is dropping out a little bit, and Jan Couto has to go and meet him while exposing the defence even further. And if you put pressure on Vinicius, he's just going to beat you. But if you don't put pressure on him, like we saw for that goal, he can find Bellingham's runs. And it's kind of like, what do you do? I'm going to have to go after Vinicius here. And that's what he wants. And Jan Couto got exposed in that sense. So, yeah, a really rough one for Jan Couto. But, and I know this isn't great for a right back, saying he's not going to be judged on his defensive abilities. But he is more like a right wing back. And in Michel's system, it's a very specific thing that he's asked to do, linking play and playing almost like a like another midfielder. So yeah, we'll move on from that. So just that's the right hand side, and I think Chigankov suffered as a result of that, and he couldn't get free. Ferland Mendy obviously really coming into his own as well. Ancelotti said recently that he's the best defensive fullback, left fullback in the world, and he just shut down Chigankov as well, and helped by Camavinga, who just covers so much ground on that side of the field for Real Madrid. On the left-hand side of the field for Girona, just nothing, just a wasteland. Savinho only had two successful dribbles. He lost the ball. He lost the ball. I'll tell you now how many times he lost the ball. He lost the ball 16 times, which is the most for any Girona player in the game, and the most for any player in the game. And just nothing would stick for him. But also, again, onto the Porto thing, Juanpe had 72 touches in the game. Blind is averaging 88 a game in La Liga this season. So we're talking about like a huge difference in just volume and where play was taking place. And Juanpe my whole vocabulary for passing. He didn't complete a pass to Porto for the entire game. And Daily Blind, to whoever it is playing in that number 10 spot, is usually a feast for them. That's where they usually find a lot of joy and break in from there and out to Savio, and then Gutierrez joins in. And I think that when you watch the first game, Gutierrez is popping up in all these places, and Real Madrid struggled with that in the first game. They absolutely didn't in this game. Valverde knew exactly what he needed to do, and because Blind was missing, obviously that it helped their case. But yeah, the left-hand side for Girona was just a wasteland.
Yeah. I think you could probably argue Savio's worst two games for Girona have been against Real Madrid home and away this season. I remember Michel kind of criticising him for the first time after the first match, where he said the moment kind of got to him. Obviously been torching defenders all season. And then when the big game came around, he was just kind of lost in the game, never really found the ways to do damage that he usually does. And again in this one, he certainly wasn't crisp. I remember there was one case, I think at 1-0, where they finally got the ball out to him in the box 1v1 against Vasquez, and he did a first-time cross that just went miles out of play. I don't know if you remember, but just seeing that moment, you thought, oh, geez, Savio has not been in the game, and now he finally is. He's nowhere near finding a solution. But again, I don't want to point to Savio too much, because I think, as you touched on there, a lot of this is what Real Madrid managed to do. The plan that he had to shut that left side down, Valverde dropping in again as into a back five at times to follow Porto into the back line and protect Carvajal and Tchouaméni, make their lives a bit easier. And again, yeah, they just didn't leave any space behind Vasquez for Savio to attack. Valverde was often close to him, closing the space off as well as keeping an eye on Gutierrez, who wasn't quite as active in terms of his movement, which I think was probably a product of knowing that when they lost the ball, he was going to be wildly out of position if he was his usual, all terrain, all over the pitch player. So yeah, I think they were probably just a little bit worried about what would happen behind them if Gutierrez really did open up.
So moving on to choose your own adventure, Girona style, I'm going to give Jamie three options and ask him which one he would pick if he was to be the coach starting over, having watched what he watched, which one would he pick? So the first option is to leave Porto out and start Stuani and Dobbik to test Madrid's back line of Carvajal and Tchouaméni. Instead of going false nine, go double nine. That's the first option. The second option is to start Pablo Torre instead of Porto to at least keep Cruz a little more occupied and someone who moves more horizontally rather than vertically. Like I was saying, there's no point in trying to match Valverde athletically, so try and beat him for nuance, which is what Torre has. And I actually thought Torre coming on at the start of the second half, he improved them slightly. There was a little bit more association there between on the left hand side, and he was making Valverde think a little bit more with his movement. So before they got the third goal, and that was game over. But that's the second option, Pablo Torre instead of Porto, and add a little bit more nuance into the attacking line. And the third option is to play Arnau instead of Juanpe. He's more of a passing threat. He might have been more willing to carry and draw Valverde out. Madrid play with no number nine anyway, so it's not like you need to match anyone physically there, and you're just watching Bellingham go. So I don't know, unless you can think of something even fancier or something else, what's your choice to maybe make it more competitive for Girona?
Yes, I think to pick one of the three in hindsight, I would most likely go for two to start Pablo Torre instead of Porto, because to me, going into the game, my feeling for Girona was I want them to keep the ball for as long as they possibly can. Even if they're not attacking and creating chances, I want them to feel like they're in control of events as much as they possibly can. And my barometer for how well they were playing was kind of how much is the Bernabeu whistling. I just felt like they needed to make Vinicius and Rodrigo run. Play with them, try and remove them from the game mentally, make them chase and starve them of the ball for as long as they possibly could. Obviously, they were not going to control the game from minute one, but again, Pablo Torre would have fit that bill, because Porto he's not really good playing with his back to play, playing in small pockets. He's somebody who wants to stretch the game. And I assume Michel started him because he wanted the legs to be able to press without the ball to try and bother the likes of Kroos and Valverde. But again, watching the game back, they didn't really impose themselves with their off-ball pressure, nor did they try to do it too much. So with that in mind, Torre is obviously not a great off-ball player, but you weren't bothering Real Madrid anyway. So maybe putting him in there would have helped you to control the game a little bit more. And yeah, just feel like you had Real Madrid where you want them. Obviously not for long spells, but just to feel like you weren't running back to your goal as often as they were. But yeah, I'll swing it back to you. Was there one of your three choices that came to mind first when you're putting those together?
You know, I do agree with that. The issue I have with the first one is that it's so easy to say, but then you can't just change and play a double nine. They're two strikers of such similar profiles. So it's easy for us to just say it here. And it would have been interesting, I think, to see just launch, but that's not who Girona are either. So, I mean, in ways, number one is kind of a bit ridiculous. Although it would have been, I would have maybe liked to see Tchouaméni and Carvajal tested a little bit more and see what, just play over Real Madrid's midfield and forget about trying to even think about beating Cruz, Valverde and Camavinga. So number one is a little bit silly, I guess. And number three, we haven't seen it before. We haven't seen Arnau in that role before. At least I can't remember him playing there. So it's hard to even kind of imagine how that might have went. And maybe that was considered. And the reason I put that in is because I was reading Marca or one of the papers before, and they had Arnau as that player. And I was thinking, is this going to happen? And then I saw the team and I was like, no, that's not happening. So I was thinking about it and I was like, that actually might have worked. And obviously, it's not just me coming up with weird ideas. It had been said by Marcus, so obviously it was someone had thought about it or mentioned it, and I think maybe
to be fair, actually, I was just going to say I do remember him playing there once, but that was Celta Vigo away, which is obviously a very different challenge where you have a lot more of the ball. So yeah, there is one example I can remember.
And how did he do in that game? Did he do well?
He was good, but obviously he's not defending for as much time, and he didn't have the pace around him from the opposition attackers. So again, I do I feel for Anel Martinez because he's just a player who should be playing every week in La Liga. But I think in this game, the defenders that Girona had available were always going to get killed in transitions with the way that the game went. So, yeah, it's one of those. I feel like it was kind of pick your poison for Michel.
But I think that the point about when I said about they don't play a nine anyway, so it's not like you're trying to match them physically. But then if Valverde would be just licking his lips looking at driving into spaces against Arnau Martinez, and that could have turned into an absolute disaster. Maybe high reward, but also huge risk. So two is probably the most logical, and we did get a look at it in some ways in the second half when Pablo Torre came on. But I do agree with everything you said. They needed to make to hold the ball again and just back to Barcelona. Not that Everton has to come back to Barcelona, but it's interesting because this is exactly what Barcelona are lacking this season. Just keep the ball, and wait for it. Just be patient. And that's what Girona needed to do. They couldn't. Real Madrid took the lead, and from that point on, it was just game over. And Michel isn't really too interested in damage limitation either, and his team just don't really know how to play like that anyway. So it was just a tough one for them. But yeah, I'm not going to lie, a little bit of an anti-climax. We were talking about this is a huge big title decider, and we thought it was going to be a little bit more even, but it turned out that it absolutely wasn't. And maybe that just tells us a lot about where Girona are at. Our expectations have gotten so high for them now that it's probably a little bit unrealistic. I remember a few years ago under Raiola, Rayo were like seventh or something after a halfway point, I think it was. And people were talking about this team, but I was like, this is a team that just needs to avoid relegation here. Stop talking about Europe. Like, this is just a team that needs to avoid relegation. And I'm not saying, obviously, Girona are way above that level now at this point, and they'll be really disappointed if they don't make the Champions League. But this is still a team under construction who have only recently come up from the second division. So they're punching above their weight, and they got punched in the mouth by world-class Real Madrid side at the Bernabeu on Saturday.
Yeah, we should remind ourselves they've lost two games this season in La Liga against Real Madrid, who are clearly the most complete team in the division by far. And this was not a normal trip to the Bernabeu for Girona. They got the Champions League level version of Real Madrid, with a full Bernabeu, with whistles every time they had the ball. You know, this was, for the fact that they were second, they'd kind of kicked the hornet's nest, and they were the number one target for Real Madrid this season. So there's just not, you can analyze Girona to death coming into the match, looking at all the things they do with the ball, without the ball, but you never really know how they're going to react in that moment when they're inside the Bernabeu, first v second, you know, everything's on the line. You've got an angry Real Madrid in front of you. It was just, there's no shame in the fact that they got blown away. And Michel said it after, if you were listening to him in the press conference, he seemed totally at peace with the fact that Girona are just not in the same league as Real Madrid, technically, physically, mentally. It was another day at the office for Real Madrid, and it was the games of their lives for many Girona players. So, yeah, this a little bit disappointed, but again, with Girona, I kind of feel like it's the same as when people criticize Alvaro Morata for being Spain's best number nine. It's like it's not his fault that nobody has shown they're better than him at this point. You know, it's, we didn't present Girona as the best team in La Liga for no reason. That they're there for a reason, and it's not their fault that nobody has been better than them. So we can't be too disappointed that they didn't go to the Bernabeu and, you know, wipe the floor with Real Madrid.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've covered that game enough, and we'll leave it there for this episode of the podcast. I'm obviously, Jude Bellingham's injury could be a massive blow for Real Madrid, and it could change everything about how they play. We we're not going to get into hypotheticals now about what they're going to do, but there's plenty of options, and we're going to have a Real Madrid guest on next week to discuss that. They obviously play Leipzig in the Champions League on Tuesday night, which is tonight, and we'll get a good look at to see what they do in that game without Bellingham. And then they play Rayo Vallecano at the weekend, which you would imagine is going to be 3 points and another chance for Ancelotti to maybe try some things out without Jude Bellingham. So, as I said, we're going to have a Real Madrid guest on next week to discuss all that and maybe to come back on a little bit of Girona and just to get a feel for where Real Madrid are at coming into the business end of the season, as the cliche goes. So, yeah, from myself and Jamie here at La Pausa Pod HQ, it's adios.